Good morning and welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I'm Nick Apps. I'm the head of the program committee here at Prairie, and unfortunately, due to illness, I'll be handing off to Bob Park later, who is one of our resident humanists and a regular contributor to the program committee, even though he's not a member. So. And I should also point out that all of you can be regular contributors as well. Just get my email address. Prairie aspires to be an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, of every sexual orientation, color, gender, or family structure. We welcome you no matter your age, your abilities, or inabilities. Later in the service, we'll be inviting visitors, guests, and returning friends as well to introduce yourselves and give us an opportunity to get to know you a little bit better. Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services. They're presented either by a Prairie member, a member of the wider community, as we have today, and at some point, we'll maybe have a minister again, and at that point, we'll presumably have programs from the minister. Today, Howard Cass will be presenting his program, Inside Humanism, today.
Story for all ages. By a Rosemary for the children. Brian Rose up here on the rock.
No pictures. We believe this is called the humanist hymn. We believe the master plan for the betterment of man is designed by us alone, for we reap what we have sown. We don't need a deity to grant us immortality. By our actions, we alone make our names forever known. We are not here to rehearse our place in the universe. From the moment of our birth, we belong to planet Earth. All the trees and mountains tall, all the creatures great and small, of this ever-twirling ball, heeded evolution's call. All the wonders of our world into human hands are hurled. Science is our tool to know how to heal and how to grow. Let's design a better land all together and demand freedom and equality, inborn worth and dignity. Every woman, every man has the power, and we can make a tattered world like this ring with rapture, sing with bliss. Let us all join hands and stand in a circle large and grand as together we devise our own earthly paradise. And this poem is what humanism means to me. Humanism means to me, I've got the opportunity to realize that I am free to take responsibility. To me, it doesn't seem so odd that many people pray to God. Whenever they are feeling low, it's just the way they have to go. But when I do not know the way, I do not feel the need to pray. I use my brain to figure out what the problem's all about. I'm grateful that I have eyes to see the beauty of the skies. I'm glad I have my ears to hear the voices of my friends so dear. But best of all, my brain's the one that figures out what must be done to help me run a better race to make the world a better place. And this story that I'd like to tell you is a story that I heard from a wonderful woman who lived in South Africa, and she won the Nobel Peace Prize. Her name was Wangari Maathai, and she told this story. She said there was a great forest fire, and all the animals stood around, the elephants, the tigers, the lions, they all stood around and watched the forest burn. And then they noticed this little hummingbird flying overhead and dropping a drop of water on the fire. And the hummingbird went back and forth and back and forth. And the animals looked up at the hummingbird and they said, "You silly thing, you can't put out the fire with just a little bit you can hold in your beak." And the hummingbird looked at them and said, "I'm doing the best I can." And that's it.
Send the children out as they go down to their classes. We're ready for a presentation. Our speaker today is Howard Katz. Howard is the president of the Humanist Society and on the board of directors of the American Humanist Association, also on the board of Humanist Charities. He has been active with the American Civil Liberties Union, was awarded the ACLU Illinois Volunteer of the Year Award, when he helped form three state chapters, and he has served for 3 years as an officer of the Illinois National Organization for Women. He has also served as a board member of his local Americans United, and the Humanists of West Suburban Chicagoland. He's held multiple public offices as a parliamentarian of his local county Democratic organization, and is a 23-plus gallon blood donor. He's passionate about pursuing activities related to human rights, the environment, and peace issues. Let's welcome Howard Katz.
Thank you. First of all, I hate working with a lectern, but we'll get around that. If anybody has a question during my presentation, ask, because that's when it means most to you and probably everybody else. So I've got no problems with being interrupted as a speaker. My first question is a couple things. First of all, who in the room are members of the American Humanist Association, just out of curiosity? Should have been more than that.
How many are humanists in your mind?
Well, what's interesting is how many people I come across on a regular basis who are humanists but didn't know what the term meant. And when you start to describe what humanism is to them, what the philosophy and the ethic is, they go, "Wow, I'm a humanist." And that's actually my background. That's what happened to me. I was born and raised as a good Jewish boy. And I'd say 12 or 13 years old, I started to realize that I believed this religion because that's what I was raised. But all my friends were raised in a religion, and that's why they thought it was correct. So I started studying world religions. It's like, you know, why do people believe what they believe? And I studied, you know, Hinduism, Buddhism, Catholicism, most of the Christian sects, American Indian beliefs, the bone religion of Tibet. I mean, I went through as many religions as I could find, and finally decided that the supernaturalistic aspects of all religions just left me cold. I just didn't really have any interest in them. And a friend of mine, I helped start our ACLU chapter in the county I live in Illinois, goes, "Well, you know, you might be interested in humanism." And I did what most people do. I said, "What's that?" And she gave me some information, and I went, "Yeah, I guess I am." And I joined the American Humanist Association. First of all, I want to read something just for people who aren't aware of it. This is the main paragraph as to what the philosophy is. "Humanism is a progressive philosophy of life that, without supernaturalism," and that's an important part, "affirms our ability and responsibility to lead ethical lives, personal fulfillment, that aspire to the greater good of humanity." Now, to get back to my original point, I was a member of the AHA probably a good 15, 20 years before I started to get involved with things. The way I got involved was through a program that's called, through the Humanist Society, which is an adjunct of the AHA. I'll get to that in a moment. It was one of those, I'll get around to it one of these days situations. So, now let me give you a little bit of background about the American Humanist Association in general. The AHA was actually founded by a group of people, largely Unitarians, but not all, who were affiliated with the University of Chicago. They formed a humanist Freethought group back in 1941. They incorporated the American Humanist Association in 1941, and it started out, of course, in Chicago, and the AHA has had, its home has been in Chicago, Los Angeles, Seattle, Amherst, New York, and currently has headquarters in Washington, D.C. The ideas of the Humanist Manifesto, now up to number 3, is what we promote. And what we're trying to do is get, yes, obviously a humanistic idea and viewpoint into everyday life, but what we're, the main point is, it's not so much that we're trying to do away with somebody's right to have a theistic belief. We just want to see a more secular society set up where everybody's rights to believe or not believe the way they want to is respected. Right now, as you've probably seen the news, I mean, I saw an article today, a friend of mine in England sent it to me, the Guardian newspaper in London actually is calling Rick Santorum, he wants to be the Messiah in chief. It's kind of scary to me when the people who are supposed to be running to preserve things like the First Amendment are trying to out-religion each other. And basically that's what it's coming down to. Now, again, I sidepoint myself a lot here. My viewpoint for humanism is this. While most, not all, but I'll say most humanists are atheists, and a lot of people will equate humanism with atheism, I don't see it that way. Not all atheists are going to be humanists. The example I use, and it kind of ticks off some of my fellow board members, but my point is that an axe murderer could be an atheist. All that means is you are atheist if you don't have a human, you don't have a belief in a deity. Doesn't mean you're a good person. A humanist, however, has the ethics and the philosophy that's embodied in the Humanist Manifesto. We do tend to be good people. We do tend to lend ourselves to that greater good of humanity. And you get a lot of people who are also, you know, of that bent who may not be necessarily humanists and could be theists. Religion's done some good. I think it's done more harm than good, but I think it's done some good. But the idea is that we as humanists do have an aspiration that a atheist may not. And I know there are people who are members of the AAI who hate it when I say that, but you know, that's my definition of it. Now, the American Humanist Association right now, it has various sub-organizations that they are involved with. I am currently, as Bob said, I'm the president of the Humanist Society. The Humanist Society actually started out as a separate organization. It was founded actually before the AHA. It was founded in 1939 by a bunch of ex-Quakers out in California. They liked the idea of the humanist movement, which was gaining popularity in the U.S. And they incorporated actually as, and we still hold this, as a religious organization in the state of California, because one of the things they wanted to do was be able to offer to the community a non-theistic way of doing weddings. Well, back then, you either were a judge / justice of the peace or a minister. So basically, they were gaming the system. They decided to incorporate it as a religious organization for a very non-religious purpose. We still hold that designation today out in the state of California, and it's caused some problems with other secular organizations who will say, well, we'd like your help, but you're religious. And it's like, only on paper. You know, come on, guys, we're doing this. Because there's still two states that still have a ministerial designation in them. Otherwise, there's ways around that from the different states. What happened to me is, like I said, it was like 10 years, I was one of these, I'll get around to it one of these days, because I like the idea of becoming a celebrant, which is my title. And I just never did it until one day I sat down, got the people I needed for my references together, sent in the application, I got certified as a celebrant. And then I made the mistake of becoming active on a listserv for other celebrants and opening my mouth. So first they put me on the certification committee, which is fine, and kept opening my mouth. And then they said, how would you like to be on the board for the Humanist Society? And I go, okay, fine. Then they made me president of the Humanist Society. And then the AHA goes, you know, you'd be a good board of directors member. And I'm going, you're sure? But, you know, they apparently like me because I got voted in. So, but that's, the Humanist Society is only one of the sub-organizations. And I'd like to at least let you know what some of the other interest groups and organizations that we have in the AHA are. One of the things, the groups we have just went through their main period, it's the Darwin Day Foundation. And did this organization, this church do a Darwin Day? You did it? Oh, come on, it's fun. It's really a good excuse for a party.
We have done.
You have?
Yeah,
it's a good excuse for a potluck, if nothing else. So it's something that we try to do. And of course, what we have the support this year of Representative Pete Stark of California, who is promoting the idea of having Darwin Day as a federal holiday. We know how where that's going to go, right? Oh, come on. I mean, yeah, we all know where it's going to go, but you have to start somewhere. So, I mean, you know, let's face it, along the other lines, you know, since I'm a NOW member, you know, Women's Rights are Human Rights, which is why I've been involved with it for years, how long have we been fighting to try to get the ERA into law? And it's introduced every session, but you don't hear about it. But so we're trying to at least keep Darwin Day idea alive. We have the Feminist Caucus, which is there to promote women's issues within the AHA. We have the Humanist Charities, which Bob mentioned. Now, the Humanist Charities is one of my pet projects. It was before I got on the AHA board. What we do with that is we are trying to put a humanist imprint on works that are done for groups out in the community. We have chapters that will work at the food banks. We'll help do trash pickup along the highways. We were very active a couple of years ago with the Haitian earthquake. We collected monies and then found a organization on the ground on the island, actually Dominican Republic, that bought food and supplies for us. They actually stenciled the Happy Humanist label, which is, you know, what the AHA uses, on the supplies, and then trucked them into an area that was hard hit, but the media wasn't picking up on because it was more rural than the main city. So we did a lot of work in helping rebuild that area and get needed supplies to the people. We donated money to the tsunami efforts in Japan. Now, granted, we're not big enough to have our own cadre of people to go out and do these things ourselves. What we will do is, like with the tsunami, we collected the money, and a lot of it went either to Doctors Without Borders or the Red Cross. We try to make sure that we're using organizations that have a secular point of view when it comes to their works. So obviously, Save Our Children, which is a Christian organization, or a Christian-oriented organization, probably wouldn't be one of our first choices for giving things. But we will do what we can to help, because obviously if we do help other people, that's our way of contributing to the greater good of humanity. I mean, let's face it, we all can't go out and grab shovels and help clear out debris after an earthquake, but we can at least help the people who can be on the ground and do it. So that's what our focus is with the Humanist Charities. We have an organization called Humanist Institute. Humanist Institute, which is out of Minneapolis, then also meets in New York, actually will give people certification and degrees in a humanist studies program. It's a 2 to 3 year program. You both do online study and then meet a couple times a year, Minneapolis or New York, and for discussion and further training. We've just affiliation with a college, and I'm blanking out on its name, on the East Coast, where the certification can actually lead into a Master's of Humanist Studies. So we will now have a degree program in humanism, and this is one of the first in the country that will lead from a certification program into a humanist degree. We have the Kochar Humanist Education Center. What we're doing with that program is we're actually developing a K through 12 educational program that can be either taught in a say, a UU school-type setting, like, you know, parochial schools might do, or on an individual basis, where people can actually teach their children everything they need to know, but from a humanist point of view, obviously more secular. Evolution's going to be a good word in that kind of program, but it's something that has been lacking. When people think of private education, the discussion seems to go towards a parochial or a fundamentalist package type of education. One of my biggest complaints is I was trained to be a high school speech teacher, never ended up with a job, as I was telling Bob the sad story on this part. But what bothers me are the people who are homeschooling their children because they don't have enough Christian values in the public education system. And all they're doing is they're buying a package on the shelf from a bookstore, and they supposedly say this is going to give them enough background to teach the children. That bothers me. What I would want to do is say that if you're going to teach your children at home, you should pass the same competency test that every public school teacher has to pass in order to educate children. Not going to go anywhere, but I really think that that should be something that we should push, is that if you're going to homeschool your children, show that you have credentials to do so. Side point on my point. I know in Illinois, all they have to do is register the fact that they're homeschooling them so that the district knows that they're there. I think it depends on state to state. I know in Illinois, at least for high school graduation, they still have to take, in some districts, the graduation test, but I'm not sure if that holds true in all states. They're followed at the same time, but and while I have some friends who are ethical society, EU tends to be... Well, first of all, EU was founded and it remains chartered as a religious organization. And their focus is a little different. They don't focus so much on the idea of humanism as they are, and I may be a little off on that. If anybody here is a little more familiar with EU, please jump in. But the focus is slightly different. I mean, you get a lot of groups who have a very similar aim. I mean, when you get down to it, what FFRF does is right in line with what American Humanist Association wants to do too. But the focus is different as far as the ways to do it. I mean, at my humanist chapter in the Chicago area, one of our members is a board member of FFRF. So I mean, there's a lot of cross pollination, if you would, on Freedom From Religion Foundation, which is located here in Madison. Moving on, a couple of the other things that we do with the AHA is we have the LGBT Humanist Council, which is, of course, looking into trying to make sure that the concerns of the LGBT community are properly addressed. And something that we have fairly new is the Reason Cinema. We're sponsoring films and documentaries that have a humanist bent to them. Some of our programs have been, we helped underwrite the production of The Golden Compass. And I was able to have lunch sit right next to Philip Pullman, one of our conferences. I'm feeling, boy, am I overclassed on some of these things. So, we have worked with humanist and progressive themed movies, the movie The Ledge. The documentary, The God Who Wasn't There. Did anybody see that one? The God Who Wasn't There. Very interesting documentary. That one, a gentleman actually sits down and goes through, starts off with half the movie is the timeline of how Christ could not have existed at the time the Bible says he existed, because all the rest of the characters are either 70 years before his supposed birth or about 70 to 100 years afterwards. And he draws the timeline down. So it's a rather interesting film. The documentary, the environmental one, Mother, Living for $7 Billion. PBS's program, Darwin's Darkest Hour. No. And Nova's program, Becoming Human. That one's really good if you haven't had a chance to see it. So the AHA board is also currently involved with several different programs that we're working on directly, and we're also in a lot of different coalitions. Right now, we are in the process of helping put together the Reason Rally, which is happening next month. Anybody here? Okay, at least one person. Are you going?
Yeah.
Oh, great. I can't afford to, unfortunately. I can't take the time off. The Reason Rally is going to be is a coalition of probably about 7 or 8 different groups. AHA, CFI, you know, Center for Inquiry, Council for Secular Humanism, Students for Secular, SSA, Secular Student Alliance. I know I'd get it out sooner or later, Secular Coalition for America. It's basically going to be a rally in D.C. for rational thought, you know, being promoted. I know, I mean, you know, whoever heard of a rationalist, especially in politics. But, so,
it's being helped. How much does that cost?
I'm sorry? How much does rationalism cost? It's priceless. We're expecting a pretty good turnout. Like I said, my problem is I work 4.5 jobs, and it's just impossible for me to take time off to be able to get out there and do it. Yeah, FFRF is one of the sponsoring organizations also, if I remember correctly. We try to promote free thought in everything we do. We have a lot of people who are involved with a lot of different... Let's get into this. We have it's called the Apogeni Legal Center. What we are trying to do is make sure that in the legal process that humanism is properly represented. We've got a couple cases that have been going on recently. Out in California, the Camp Pendleton. Anybody familiar with the Camp Pendleton Cross case?
Mm-hmm.
Cross. The Veterans Ministry, one of the veterans groups erected a, I think it was like a 50-foot cross, right on Camp Pendleton, right on governmental grounds. We were involved with a court case to take the cross down. Now, of course, we've deeded the land over to this group. It's no longer public property. It's now, it was all machinations just to be able to keep a cross there. We managed to have them, we were involved with having them take the cross off of a governmental base. We were involved with several cases that are going on right now. Coalition of Reason, which is an organization that sets up coalitions throughout the country. There have been several locations where we were involved with a COR group in Chicago, but they've been trying to put ads on buses. It's, you know, don't believe in God, you're not alone. You may have seen some of these billboards type of things. And several cities have tried to put roadblocks up in front of the UCOR groups from putting it up. Seattle, Washington, for example, which I always would have thought would have been a little more open to a free thought type of thing. They were saying, like, well, you can do this, but you're going to have to go out and buy a $3 million insurance policy because we're afraid our buses might be vandalized. And they were Little Rock, somebody who was on the transportation board, who it turns out was a fundamentalist minister, I believe, said, we don't want anything like this on our buses at all. Block them in any way you can. We took them to court, and in all instances, the court has said that freedom of speech is more important than somebody's religion, and that, if, for example, in Seattle, if they're going to demand that we do a $3 million insurance policy, everybody has to take out one, which of course means that the Seattle Transportation Authority dropped that requirement completely. So they are putting the bus ads on. Yes, actually, but well, I'm not sure if it'd be freedom of the press because printed, but a billboard is actually more, I think, freedom of speech is, I think, how they look at billboards. It's not like a printed treatise that you would hand out or people could buy. I'm not a lawyer. I really can't, and I don't play one on TV, so I can't get into the specifics, but my understanding was it was more done as a freedom of speech issue is how the courts came down on the side. We were involved with a case in Kentucky. Anybody aware of this one? It was a woman who was working for a church organization in Kentucky, and she became pregnant as an unmarried woman, and they fired her because the Baptist group that she was working with said this isn't within our, codes. We helped represent her with the EEOC, and the EEOC did fine for her. So there have been, unfortunately, other cases where they've said that the church has the right to discriminate, but those are things that we're going to continue fighting with. Bob and I were talking about this one just yesterday. What is her name? I can't remember her name, Bob. In Cranston? The banner? The prayer banner? The woman with the... you talk about the florist? Thank you! I can barely remember my own name sometimes, let alone anybody else's. So, Jessica's case was rather interesting. There was a small school in Cranston, Rhode Island, that for about 20 years had a banner in the hallway that was basically, said something to the effect of, remember to pray or something along those lines. But it was a very religious banner. This high school senior finally got tired of seeing it because she realized it was a violation of church and state. Asked for it to be taken down, they refused. We actually helped represent her. The courts just recently found that it did violate church and state separation, and the school board decided instead of fighting something that they knew they'd end up losing and be very costly, they took it down. This poor girl has been so ostracized by her community that there were people from like around here, for example, sent her congratulatory flowers. The florist in her own town refused to deliver them because how dare we, do any support for that atheist? They ended up getting a florist who was an hour away. Said, "I'll be happy to." He drove an hour just to bring her flowers. Wow. So it happens all the time. I just a side point that I actually, when I joined the ACLU, was something similar. I went to a high school in near South Bend, Indiana. I was one of maybe 4 or 5 non-Christians in the whole high school. And come Christmas time, and it was the mandatory Christmas convocation, and I said to my high school, my homeroom teacher, I said, it's really not my holiday, I'm going to be in the library. And she said, fine. So I'm sitting in the library, and I'm just reading a book, minding my own business, and the assistant principal walks by, he does a double take, he comes in there, and he demands that I get my rear end into the convocation. And I said, no, this is not my holiday. I think I'm a junior, they were started to threaten to expel me for disobeying him, and my parents basically said, fine, you want to expel him? I'm sure the Jewish Community Council of South Bend would love to have this case. They backed down, and I found out about the ACLU at that point, and all my friends are going, well, we'll put up Hanukkah menorahs for you. And I said, no, that's not the point. I said, nothing should be in the public schools. So I learned very early about what was involved with Jewish state separation. And it's been a passion of mine since high school, so which was, 10 years ago? No. We're also involved right now with a case that's going to prove very interesting. It's been tried on and off in various locations. We're trying a case actually in Massachusetts where we're trying to see whether or not we can get the words "under God" removed from the Pledge of Allegiance done in public schools. Now, I personally, when I pledge allegiance, happen to stay silent for those two words. That's my choice. As Bob mentioned, I've held public office. I still attend one of our township meetings. I used to be township clerk for my area. And there's one gentleman who's currently, well, that's on the money. I see this gentleman, Galen's taking his money out. On God's trust. Yeah. Well, the interesting history on that, I don't know if you all know about that. That was actually added in 1954. Well, he didn't really push, the Congress pushed it. The idea was that this was right at the height of the Cold War. And we were going to show how different we were from those godless communists. But most people think that it's been there since the beginning of the country, and it hasn't. In fact, and I'm trying to remember which president, Roosevelt's coming to mind, but I'm probably wrong, even the So Help Me God, when they do the oath of office, was never there. And none of the presidents up to whoever it was in the 40s or 50s ever said, use the G word. I mean, it was just never there. E pluribus unum. was there originally. But I mean, but all, yeah, what's that mean? You know, basically what?
Refers to our country.
Yeah. Well, but it means in numbers or strength or whatever the actual. Many one. Thank you.
Many one.
I barely speak English and American, let alone. You know. But yeah, so you know, that's the whole idea. Is you know, we're trying to make sure that the rights of non-theists are as recognized as the theists. The under God part of that, basically, if you're not a theist and you're forced to say that, you know, that pretty much means that you're saying something that's against your own beliefs or non-beliefs, as it is your own philosophy, let's put it that way. And I was going to say, I lost the last election that I was in by just a couple points, and one of the people who replaced me, very, very fundamentalist gentleman, and standing next to me, I still attend all the township meetings, and we do the pledge, you know, every time. We're very good. We don't open with a prayer. You know, the supervisor there, while he's a religious person, does believe in the First Amendment, so he does not do a even a non-sectarian prayer. I'm really not sure there is such a thing. But when I did not say those two words, I could see out of the corner of my eye his head snapped around to stare at me like I was just doing something that was going to completely cause the earth to open up and we're all just going to fall in. And we've had a few discussions since, and basically, I'm just letting them know. I'm going back to the, you know, they always use the term original intent when they're talking about why they want to put religion back into public policy, when it was never there in the first place, but that's besides the point. I keep telling them, I'm just going back to the original Pledge of Allegiance. You can't argue with that, can you? And of course, he can because he wants to make sure that religion's in everything. But we have some interesting discussions on that. In South Carolina, we're working with a secular student alliance on a one. There are a couple schools in South Carolina that are still working with release time. Everybody know what that is? Right. Come across that? This was something that was real popular in the 40s and 50s. I know somebody who was involved with the case in Illinois that went to the Supreme Court. Release time is when the public schools release the kids to go to religious education.
Yes.
And in a lot of instances, the buses that take the kids to the churches are school buses, which means the taxpayers are paying for religious education. Back in the 40s and 50s, and this was on PBS fairly recently, it was the name of the program was The Lord Was Not on Trial Here. Did anybody catch that one? Oh. Looks like only Bob was the one who caught that one. This has to do with a case. It was a woman who was living in Champaign, Urbana area back in, I think it was the 40s. And the Champaign school districts did release time. And the woman, her name was Vashti McCall, her husband worked for the U of I, University of Illinois, decided that, well, first of all, you know, they were atheists. They were, you know, weren't involved with the Humanist Association at that point. They were atheists. She didn't like the idea that her son had to either sit in the study hall or out in the hallway when they were doing either religious education in the schools or busing them out. So she sued the school district. And it made its way all the way up to the Supreme Court, which decided that release time, at least the way that the Champaign schools were doing it, was unconstitutional. And, of course, she became one of the most hated people in Champaign, almost as bad as you know, this poor girl in Cranston. But interestingly, her son, who was named as one of the plaintiffs in the case, later became the mayor of Champaign. So wounds do heal. Jim's also currently right now one of our celebrants, so he's come a long way through the ranks on that one. Actually, let me give you some of the coalitions. I think I did. Secular Student Association, or Alliance, I mean Secular Student Alliance. That's an organization out of Columbus that works to put secular chapters in colleges and high schools. Kind of like the Newman Group is for Catholics on college campuses. You know, we're trying to do an SSA. I've been working with a couple of the colleges in the Chicagoland area. Kind of sitting in and helping them where I can for those chapters. Camp Quest, which is involved with, I think there's four or five camps throughout the country. Camp Quest is trying to do, Anybody here go to YMCA or YWCA camp as a kid?
Sure.
Yeah. It was great, but you always had to do the services on Sunday. Camp Quest is, gives kids the ability to do a camping experience, but from a secular point of view. Secular Coalition of, for America is actually a, started off as a, let's say an offshoot of the AHA, but we were primary in funding them and getting them started. That's actually a lobbying organization that goes to Capitol Hill and pushes for a non-sectarian, a secular viewpoint in laws. And of course, one of our biggest supporters on that is Pete Stark. According to Representative Stark, there's probably about 20 or 30 congressmen and senators that he knows directly are non-theistic, but don't dare say anything because they're afraid they're not going to get reelected if they come out as non-religious. My favorite quote from Mahatma Gandhi was, "An eye for an eye only makes the whole world blind." And I'm sorry, I can't see where killing somebody because of an act they did is going to bring back the people who are dead. No, I understand what you're saying, but you know what? If somebody's a psychopath, I'd rather they be around that they could be studied so maybe we could identify early people who may have those tendencies and help them. Killing somebody because of an act they did, and you may disagree with me on this, and you have the right. Personally, I think it's barbaric. We could probably spend another hour in a conference by itself, so I'm gonna pass. I think we're going to have to agree to disagree on this one. I think I've got friends that I've gotten to know in the British Humanist Association. I believe they were involved with making that movie. And what's the, you know, the reason why he published when he did is, and I'm blank, again, I'm bad on names, there was another gentleman who had a similar theory. That's Wallace, and Darwin knew that Wallace was about to publish, so he hurried out to The Origin of Species just so he could beat Wallace to the publishing deadline. That was one movie of all the things we did. You know, there was a brochure that the ACLU put out years ago that said, imagine an organization you can agree with half the time. Very honestly, if you were thinking of joining the AHA and then all of a sudden you'd say, well, I don't agree with this one position, so I'm not going to join, I'd ask you to look at everything that they do, and if you're really concerned about the one aspect, get involved and see what you can do about it. Seriously, I don't agree with their. I'm on the board, and I don't agree with everything they do. And there's been some discussions where I've been the sole voice. In, you know, the year and a half I've been a board member. They understand, they respect it. Yeah, I may be out. Well, actually, you know, for me, just as a side point, I personally would rather change it to I pledge allegiance to the Constitution. I mean, a flag is just a piece of cloth. Who really cares about that? And I'm not having to follow anything into battle to know where my side is, which is why the original, you know, you pledge allegiance to a flag. Right. So I mean, I would just say I pledge allegiance to the Constitution. It makes more sense to me. Well, actually, Darwin himself was actually fairly religious, but you know what he was saying was that, as you're aware of the Origin of Species, is that everything comes from something else that was a lower form or a different form. So that's where the idea of evolution, you know, one step, one step, one step comes. Of course, I've seen a lot of cartoons that look at some of the people running for president, and it's a de-evolution, but, you know, it's... Sorry, bad joke. True, but you know, one way to look at it, though, folks, is let's face it, the fundamentalists aren't going to do a live and let live. They're going to do whatever they can to ram through. I don't want to live in a theocracy. So if we have to take things to court in order to be able to manage to get a more secular viewpoint, which should have been there in the first place, maintained in law, and I actually look at a lot of things we do, the ACLU does, and all the rest. I like to say I'm conservative because I'm trying to conserve the rights of free thought and freedom of thought, freedom of religion. We have to be proactive, and it's like the idea of running in place with the Alice in Wonderland. You have to run as hard as you can, just stay in the same place.
That concludes our discussion. Thank you very much.
No problem of human destiny is beyond human beings.
Man's reason and spirit have often solved the seemingly unsolvable, and we believe they can do it again. John F. Kennedy.